discussion of Chapter 2, Nectar Devotion, the six characteristics of Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service. We'll continue our discussion of bhakti, what it is and what it ain't. Anyabhilashi sunyam gyanakamandinavritam anukulina krishnana shilam bhaktirtama. So we collected some notes from Madhurya Kadambini that also discuss this bhakti, because the more we can understand about what we are trying to pursue, the more clearly we'll be able to pursue it. What is it? So Vishnu Chakravartipad, he quotes a verse from Gopal Tapani Upanishad, chapter 1, verse 15. And there, and the Shrutis are just describing that exclusive absorption of the mind and all senses and the unmotivated service of the Lord without any desire for enjoyment either in this world or the other world is known as bhajan. So the bhajan or devotion, bhakti. And in the verse, the word is naishkarmya or nishkarma. In the verse, the word naishkarmya is used because when one executes pure devotion, all the fruits of his previous activities, such as prarabdha, are destroyed, and the mind becomes free from the effects of the three gunas, tamaguna, rajaguna, sattvaguna, and one becomes absorbed in relishing the mellows of Krishna's service. So this word bhajan, we say Krishna bhajan, Hari bhajan, and the Prabhupada often quotes that the root, the mool of this word, the root of this word is bhaj, is bhajana, ana and bhaj, bhaj. Bhaj means to serve. So that's what bhakti means. Bhakti means service. Bhakti means love, and love means service for Krishna's pleasure. So now that we will discuss today for Nectar Devotion the six characteristics of pure devotional service, which is chapter 1 of Nectar Devotion. And this is also discussed in Madhurya Kadambini by Vishnu Chakravartipada. He quotes the Smriti literature. Here he quoted Shrutis. Shruti, Smriti, Pranati, Panchana, Trika, Vidimbira. That the Vidhi, Shastric Vidhi, establishes the truth or reality of spiritual life. It's based on the evidence and proof of the previous Shastras, primarily the Shrutis and Smritis. Smritis are the corollary Vedic literature which pursue the Shrutis. The Shrutis are the original, the four Vedas, the Tarva Veda, Rig Veda, Sama Veda, and the Yajur Veda, and then the 108 Upanishads, and 18, and then the Puranas are considered Smriti. And the Pancharachika literatures are Smriti. So we call the Shruti, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Now Vishnu is quoting Smriti. Smriti is Narada Pancharatra. He quotes the famous verse that we've heard so many times, and we've just heard from Prabhupada, how one should not think that he's American or Indian or wealthy or poor or whatever. Saravopadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti uchate. So this verse is another verse to give the definition of bhakti, which Rupa Goswami, or rather Srila Prabhupada, quotes in Nectar of Instruction. Sarvapadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikesha rishikena sevanam bhakti uttama. So uttam bhakti is this. Narada Pancharatra also defines uttam bhakti. It's mukti, vinir muktam, is completely free from all designations and is pure. And one is, all one's rishika, which means senses, are engaged in the master and lord of the senses. Bhakti means engaging all the senses in the service of the Lord, the master of the senses, only for his pleasure. The devotee practicing unalloyed devotion is completely free from desire for sense gratification in this world and the next. So then, Vishnu Chakravarti in Madhurya Kadambini, he quotes the verse that we've been discussing as further praman. He quoted Shrutis, Gopal Tapani. He quoted Smritis, Narada Pancharatra. Now he quotes the Goswami Granthas. So he quotes Rupa Goswami because he's Mahajana. Mahajana Yena Katasa Panta. We follow the path of the Mahajans. Dharmasya Tattvam Nihitam Guhayam. That the truth of Dharma is actually Guhayam. It's hidden in the hearts of the great acharyas in the parampara, Guru Shrestha. So therefore, the statements of realized acharyas like Rupa Goswami and Sridhar Swami, they are valuable. They are just like the Shrutis and Smritis. So first Shrutis, which is Mukhya Praman, and then Gona Praman or secondary Praman and Smritis, then Tishari or Tertiary, third in the line of Praman or evidence is the statements of the Mahajans and the great spiritual teachers. So he's following this system and presenting his arguments in the Durya Kandambini. First Smritis, which are most authoritative, then Smritis, which are second in the position, and then the Prabhupada said, well, the Bhagavatam says, and the Gita says, Acha. Yeah. But Prabhupada said, oh, Prabhupada said, oh, we must do it. it's a Prabhupada said. So what did Rupa Goswami say? Anyavi lashita shunyam gyanakamad yadavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilam bhakti uttamam. So we know that. We've been discussing that for 2 days. Uttama bhakti, supreme devotion, means to engage in favorable service to the Lord. This bhakti is completely free from material desires and devoid of jnana karma. So Vishwanath and Jiva Givatika, which is basically what we've been discussing from Rupa about this verse, Surat Lakshana and like that, Pravritti Mulaka. This is the Nivritti Mulaka. But interesting, he says that this idea of Anushilanam, which means the favorable practice, has two divisions. This is kind of a review of what we discussed about the definition of bhakti from Rupa Goswami. But this is the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti. He describes these two aspects of Anushilanam. Anushilanam, which means favorable. Bhakti should be favorable to Krishna, pleasing to Krishna. Like, for example, we have to eat, and we are told to eat sattvic vegetarian foods, sattvic and sattvagun. So, all right, I'm Italian, I like pizza. So I cook pizza and I offer it to Krishna. So I take prasad, pizza prasad. But is that really what Krishna likes? Well, I like it. I really like it. Pizza is very good, you know. And there's different kinds of pizzas, and I like all different kinds of pizzas. You know, Valencia and this kind and that kind, and I don't know, so many kinds. Yeah, I'm just giving an example. Personally, I never eat pizza. I don't like it. So now we have to ask the question: is this really bhakti? It's dovetailing. It's karma mishra bhakti. You're offering to Krishna, but is it pleasing Krishna? Is it favorable to Krishna? Is it what he eats? Like, if you're going to please me, I say, oh, you know, I like this pizza. Here, you take it. It's nice, isn't it? He said, yeah, it's nice. So, are you pleased? No, you'd rather have, you know, some rice dal, sabji, or mung dal, or something. So, I'm giving you vegetarian food. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm pleased. Are you pleased? Yeah, it's vegetarian, it's nice, you know. You offered it to me, it's nice. But is it what pleases you? Is it favorable to you? Well, you want to know my honest feelings? Yeah. I can't stand it. I don't like it. Oh, acha. But you're offering it to me, okay, so you're a karma mishra bhakti, so I'll accept it. Because at least you're not just eating it, like, you know, even eating it while you're cooking it. Oh, that looks good. Tastes pretty good, you know. At least you're waiting till you're finished cooking it, and you rang a bell and put tulsi on it and tried to offer it to me, and even though you half ate it already, but you didn't fully eat it. So I'll accept that half-eaten offering of something I don't like to eat. So this is a kind of a key point here, is that find out what does Radharani cook for Krishna, and what does Krishna like? Well, Prabhupada taught us all about that, because we thought that Krishna would like anything that we like. And Prabhupada said, no, Krishna likes halava. Oh, what's halava? Well, I'll show you how to make it. And Prabhupada took us in the kitchen and taught us how to make halava. Oh, sure. Krishna likes gulab jamuns. Gulab jamuns? What's a gulab jamun? I'll show you how to make it. Prabhupada took us in the kitchen and showed us how to make gulab jamuns. Krishna likes pakoras. Pakoras? What's that? Oh, I'll show you how to make it. Prabhupada took us in the kitchen and showed us how to make pakoras. And this way, Prabhupada, he gave us the Hare Krishna cookbook. He taught us how to cook for Krishna. Cook with bhakti. Bhakti kitchen. So this Anushilanam, which means acting favorably, to please Krishna has two divisions, which we, this is a review. One is called Pravriti Mulaka, and the other is called Nivriti Mulaka. So in Vishnath Chakravarti's discussion of these points from Nectar of Devotion, he says that Pravriti Mulaka means this is what you should do. You should serve Krishna with your body, glorify his name, his qualities, and his pastimes with your voice, and you should engage your mind in thinking of Krishna's form and qualities and pastimes. So our body we should engage in serving Krishna, distributing books, cooking, cleaning, painting, whatever. And our mouth, our words, we should glorify Krishna. Oh, Krishna's pastimes are like this, his qualities are like this, his name is so wonderful and this and that. And then our mind, we should meditate. Oh, I meditate on Krishna's form. His smile is like this, his hair is like this, his eyes are like this. And his qualities and his pastimes. And we should always keep a loving attitude toward Krishna within the heart. So this is Pravritti Mulaka. This is what we should do. Then the Nivritti Mulaka, the don'ts. We should avoid aparads. This comes under Anushilanam. In a favorable practice of Krishna consciousness, which is one of the qualities of Uttama Bhakti, we should avoid seva aparads, and avoid nama aparads, and avoid Vaishnava aparads, and avoid dhamma aparads. In his discussion with Uri Kadambini, I just include this because it's complementary to our discussion Nectar Devotion. It further enriches our understanding of bhakti. Vishnath explains what is Shuddha Bhakti, which means this is, Uttam Bhakti means Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti. So we want to communicate with our body, mind, and senses pure devotion, Shuddha Bhakti. So he says here, defines thus, if one favorably serves Krishna only for his pleasure, without any ulterior or hidden or private or secret motives for sense enjoyment or liberation, and free from any mixtures of jnana and karma, and is simply always absorbed in hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna, and performing other sevas from moment to moment, this is called Shuddha Bhakti. Shuddha Bhakti is known by different names. Sometimes it is called Uttama Bhakti, or Nirguna Bhakti, which means free from the influence of the three gunas of the qualities of Maya. Kevala Bhakti, which means devotion only for the pleasure of Krishna. Ananya Bhakti, like in Gita it says, Ananya Chintiyanta Mam Yejana Paripashade. Ananya Bhakti means having anyata, having no other motive than devotion. Akinchana Bhakti, which means have no desire other than to serve Krishna. Sarup Siddha Bhakti, perfect by its own nature. So all these different names are describing the same thing. Uttam Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, Nirguna Bhakti, Ananya Bhakti, Akinchana Bhakti, Sarup Siddha Bhakti. Now, Vishnath quotes the Gopal Tapani Upanishad to describe what is the actual, he calls it the Swarupa Bhakti, the very intrinsic nature or the actual form, the original form of bhakti. So he quotes this verse, Vijnana Gana Ananda Gana Sachidanandaika Rase Bhakti Yogi Tishtati. Sri Krishna, the personality of absolute knowledge and concentrated bliss can be attained by the mercy of Sachidananda Mai Bhakti. So bhakti is like an energy, just like Sita will give us Ram and Radharani will give us Krishna. By the mercy of the energy, we can attain the energetic. The Shakti will give us the Shaktiman. That's why Prabhupada told us when we're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, what did he tell us the meaning? It means it's a prayer to Shakti, Shakti Vandanam. We're praying to Shakti. Oh Shakti, please introduce me to Shaktiman. Right? He's saying, oh Radharani, oh Hare, oh Mother Hara, oh energy of the Lord, O Vadini Shakti of the Lord, O Divine Bliss Potency, O Potency of Unlimited Pure Spiritual Love, please engage me in the service of the Supreme Energetic. Please engage me in the Supreme Shaktiman, the possessor of all Shakti, Sarva, the owner of all the Shaktis. So we're actually, right from day one, Prabhupada is aligning us in the proper way to approach the Shaktiman through the Shakti. So that's Satchidananda Mayi Bhakti. Bhakti is that energy which is transcendental and is full of consciousness and it's eternal. Bhakti, like Lord Krishna, is also eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. Bhakti Devi is Krishna's self-manifesting internal potency. Sometimes people say, Tulsi Maharani Bhakti Devi ki. This is a faux pas. And this is incorrect. This is wrong. Tulsi Devi is not Bhakti Devi. She is a devotee of Krishna, as are all the Sakhis and Manjaris. She's a Sakhi. She's a duty. She's a messenger. She arranges for all the pastimes of Krishna in the forest of Vrindavan. She's Leela Shakti. But she's not Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi is Krishna's devotional side. Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Krishna, but specifically an expansion of Radharani, because it's Shakti, and Radharani is the source of all Shaktis. So Bhakti, like Lord Krishna, is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. Bhakti Devi is Krishna's self-manifesting internal potency. Bhakti Devi is eternal, and by her own independent sweet will, she appears in the internal and external senses of the devotee. So now here's a question. We just said, quoting this verse from Gopal Tapani Upanishad about the sarup of Shakti, of Bhakti, what is the original form of Bhakti, the sarup of Bhakti? So we said that Bhakti is the internal energy of Krishna, Bhakti is spiritual, Bhakti is eternal. We use the term Satchit Ananda Mayi Bhakti. Satchit Ananda Mayi. Right? It's transcendental. So now the question is, if Bhakti is completely transcendental, Chit Ananda Mayi, how can it manifest in the material senses of a devotee? That we discussed yesterday. So use the analogy of iron rod put in the fire. You put an iron rod in the fire, and by associating with the fire, it becomes identified. The fire becomes identified with the iron rod, and by association, identification, the iron rod begins to act like fire. It becomes red hot in color, red in color, extremely hot in temperature. And if you take that iron rod out for some time, it can burn paper and create fire. So the material senses of the body, material mind, eyes, nose, ears, etc., by associating with Krishna's name and associating with Krishna's devotees and Krishna's, service, then that Bhakti Devi identifies with the body and the senses and acts to spiritualize them. That's what we use the term spiritual electricity. Electricity is flowing down. So this same point is made by Vishnath. He said, how can this completely transcendental energy, which is internal, it's spiritual, it's Krishna's self-manifesting internal potency. But in other words, Bhakti Devi is Swarup Shakti of Krishna. It is a personal. It's Chidananda Mayi. How can it manifest in the material senses of a devotee? Because we're Bahiranga Shakti. We're Tatastha Shakti. We're Maya Shakti. We're just, we're temporary. We're not transcendental. This is not spiritual body. So then, the same analogy is that the iron bar put in fire attains the same quality. So Bhakti, by its own potency, destroys the material nature of the devotee's senses and transforming it in spiritual nature, spiritualizing his senses. So in Priti Sandarbha number 65, Jiva Goswami describes also the Sarupa of Bhakti. He says, Bhaktir Ivainam Nayati Bhaktir Darshayati. Bhakti brings one near the Lord. Bhakti makes one see the Lord. Bhakti brings the Lord under his control. Bhakti is the supreme path of attaining the Lord. Now, in this section, this is further description of how Bhakti is Krishna's Sarup Shakti. Bhakti is called Krishna's Sarup Shakti. Krishna's transcendental spiritual form is Satchidananda, right? Everyone knows that. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita. So Krishna is Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti means spiritual, completely transcendental energy. There's no inside of his body and outside. We have skin and bones and muscles, and underneath all of that, there is nerves And then underneath that, there's mind and intelligence and ego, and finally the Atma. The Atma is emanating energy, consciousness, awareness throughout the whole body and giving the body its appearance of life. So life force is coming from the Atma, from the soul. So there's the outside and the inside. There's the soul and the body. And for Krishna, there's no difference between the inside and the outside. It's all completely transcendental. It's not like the material body, then the spiritual body inside. The external covering of material body, internally the soul. Externally, Krishna is transcendental. Internally, it's all the same. So it says that Krishna's Chit Shakti has three different features. Sandini, which is his energy of existence. By this energy, Krishna maintains his own existence and that of others. Samvit, this is the energy of knowledge. Through this energy or potency, Krishna knows about himself and causes others to know him. The third aspect or feature of the Chit Shakti or spiritual Swarup Shakti of Krishna is Ladini Shakti. This is the energy related to bliss and love, divine bliss. By this energy, Krishna experiences divine bliss and gives divine bliss and joy to others. It is this Ladini Shakti only that overwhelms Krishna with ecstasy. The supremely blissful state of Ladini that exists in the devotee is called Bhagavat Priti, divine love or prema. So we say Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Siddhikavanai, Shravanadi Shuddha Chite, Kalaya Udai. That this Udai, Kalaya Udai, this is made, this Prem that's in the heart, this sweet taste of love that's in the heart of every jiva, is made to awaken by the process of hearing about Krishna and chanting about Krishna, hearing and chanting Krishna's name and fame and the Bhagavatam, Gita, and Mahamantra. Eventually awakens up this love in the heart, and we start to express our love towards Krishna by serving him. And our service becomes more and more pure, free from personal motivation, more and more selfless, and more and more directed only for Krishna's pleasure. Then Krishna, as that prema becomes verified and purified, it develops a sweeter and sweeter taste, which Krishna relishes. And he relishes, and then he returns the happiness he feels by filling the heart of the jiva or the devotee with a superlative form of happiness, which is called bhakti-anand or sevanand, the bliss of serving Krishna. So he wants to taste that hidden love and that secret love that's hiding in the heart of every jiva. So that's the process of bhakti, reveals that and brings it out. So what's coming out is that dormant ladini shakti in the jiva. The jiva is also such an ananda vigraha, right? And We are such an ananda vigraha. We are also eternal, full of cognizance and bliss. This ananda means ladini, bliss potency. So it exists in a devotee. It's called Bhagavat Priti. Priti means the love. Krishna can also taste and experience this within his devotee. And thus the Lord and his devotee become attached to each other. We taste Krishna's love and he tastes ours. And by tasting Krishna's love, we become attached to him. And as Krishna tastes our love, he becomes attached to us. And he says in the ninth chapter of the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, Saranam Ridyam Mayam, Saranam Ridyat Twayam. I am always in the heart of the pure devotees, sadhus, saintly people, and they are always in my heart. I am never lost to them, and they are never lost to me. So these three potencies, Satchitananda, which is called sometimes called Sandini, Samvit, and Badini, cannot be separated from each other. In any manifestation of Swarup Shakti, one of these three states is predominant, while the other two are present in a lesser quantity. That's why sometimes they say, it is said that Balaram is the personification of Sandini, existence potency, and Radharani is the personification or embodiment of Ladini Shakti, and Krishna is the personification of Samvit Shakti, Krishna or Vasudeva. Sometimes they say Vasudeva, one of Krishna's expansions. Vasudeva is Samvit Shakti, knowledge, cognizance, awareness. But that doesn't mean that Radharani is the embodiment of Ladini, and that doesn't mean she has no Sandini and Samvit. And it doesn't mean that Balaram has no Ladini and no Samvit, because he's the embodiment of Sandini. But that's the predominating potency that they're exhibiting for the pleasure of Krishna. They embody that to the greatest extent. But Balaram also, he's not just Sandini, existence potency. And he expands as Natashesh and as a Purusha avatars to render various services to the Lord. He holds up the material world on the hood of his hoods as Ananta. Then he becomes Krishna's bed and Krishna's slippers and Krishna's holy dham and so many things that deal with existence for Krishna to exist and carry on his pastimes are done personally by Balaram because he's Sandini Shakti, he's existence potency. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have Ladini also. Ladini means the ability to love and enjoy the topmost bliss. So Ladini expands from Balaram as his sakis. Balaram has his gopis, who are expansions of his Ladini Shakti, right? It's like Krishna expands gopis from himself, expands into Radharani, and she expands into so many gopis. They're all expansions of Krishna's Ladini Shakti. And then they, in turn, give Krishna pleasure. So Balaram, he also expands, he directly expands his Ladini Shakti as Krishna expands into Radharani. This Balaram, he expands into Ananga Manjari. Ananga Manjari is a sister of Radharani, the younger sister of Radharani. She serves Krishna in so many ways, intimate ways, and also serves Radharani. So this is the point that Vishnath is making. So how do we get bhakti? Where do we get it? How does it come? How does it manifest? So he explains in this category, he says that bhakti is self-manifesting, which it's on its own. If it wants to manifest, it will. But a self-manifesting state of chit-shakti consisting of Ladini, Sandini, and Samvit, Krishna appears in his original eternal form along with his associates and his transcendental abode. This is the state of Swarup Shakti known as Vishuddha Sattva. When Ladini predominates, Bhakti or Bhagavat Priti, love of God, manifests. Bhakti manifests herself in the devotee by her own independent will. So sadhana bhakti, which we're doing, we're practicing sadhana, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, svaranam, bhadasevanam, archanam, vandanam, sakyam, atman, vedanam. It says that sadhana bhakti performance makes the heart suitable for her appearance. For example, if there's some rough terrain or earth somewhere and you want to go farming there, first you have to clear the land. You have to clear all the trees, you have to take out all the big rocks and those small pebbles and clean all the earth and prepare it very nicely. Then you hoe the earth and turn over the earth and mix cow dung and fertilizer inside and make it very soft and nice. And then you plant the seeds. And then the seeds and plants start to grow and produce fruits and flowers. So the heart, the field of the heart is full of thorns and full of stones and pebbles and cactus plants and big boulders and heavy rocks, and the field of the heart is like a desert. It's very dry, it's very parched, it's very hard. So it's very difficult to grow something in such terrain, such type of ground. You can't even put the seed in the ground because the ground is like rock hard. It's a desert. It's been baked, sun-baked dry by the intense scorching heat of material desires, the fire of lust. The fire of lust has been burning in our heart for thousands of lifetimes. And the fires of greed and envy and anger have been assisting that fire. And this way they burn the surface of our heart and burn it into a crust. So it's very hard, rock hard. So the feel of the heart has to be softened. And the whole process of bhakti is a process of softening the heart by removing these boulders and chopping up this dirt and freeing the heart from greed and anger and lust and envy and all these gross and subtle desires which harden the heart. Chaito Dharpanam Marjanam. This Sankirtan does that. So then when the heart is like that, then bhakti can consider, maybe, yes, this heart is something suitable. Maybe I can live over there because I'm a tender creeper of devotion. I'm a bhakti lata. And maybe I can live there. But first I have to enter there as a seed. I must enter there first as a seed, and then I can produce leaves and branches and twigs, and then more leaves and more growth and more foliation and Finally, I'll produce flowers, and then at the last point, I'll produce fruits, which are the fruits of Krishna Prema. So that seed is received from Guru. So he performs so many Sukritis, and so many, it's called Bhakti Abhas, the performance of limbs of Bhakti before initiation and before meeting Sadguru. And it's called an Abhas. It is, we are Vaishnava Praya, or Kanishta Bhakta. We're almost Vaishnavas, and we are practicing forms of Sukriti, hearing and chanting. It is called Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti. It's a type of, there's Falun Mukhi, which gives karmic results or rewards, and Bhakti Unmukhi, which means engaging in spiritual activities, but they aren't pure bhakti because we aren't established in a relationship with Krishna yet by the process of Diksha and Sharanagati. So our heart is becoming purified. Then we receive the seed of bhakti, Brahmanda Brahmatikon, Bhagyavana Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi Abhai, Bhakti Lata Beach. Then bhakti enters our softened heart in sincere efforts on the path of devotion. So it's self-manifesting. And then he quotes some verses from the Bhagavatam, first canto and 11th canto, Hartikiya Pratiyata. The bhakti is causeless. So then he makes a point here that bhakti is the cause of bhakti. He says, the causeless mercy of a madhyam bhakta, like a madhyam adhikari, means a preacher, who is Satchidananda, like Krishna. This is the cause of bhakti. So bhakti is caused by bhakti. We meet a bhakta. We meet someone who actually has devotion for Krishna. And he's connected with the flow of spiritual energy. He's connected with the Swarup Shakti of the Lord, which is the Satchidananda. That means Swarup Shakti. Because of his own surrender to his guru, because of his own sincere service and dedication, bhakti has chosen to move in his heart and develop there and manifest there. And if he's a madhyam adhikari, at least there's some flowers on that plant of bhakti emanating some sweet fragrance and attractive color, so that he has the shakti and attractive quality of Krishna emanating from his person and his words by which to attract the heart of other conditioned souls to the path of bhakti. That is if he is a kanishtha who has become a madhyam. But if he's an uttam, then he's on the platform of bhava bhakti and possibly praying, and he's stepping down to the platform of madhyam to discriminate and to discriminate four types of people and disseminate the bhakti, the mercy of Krishna by preaching. So there are two types of madhyams. And there are two different levels of bhakti. But both of them are exhibiting the Satchidananda Maya energy of the Lord. It's a matter of how much degree. Because the Kanishtha is becoming a madhyam, he's situated on a platform of Nishtha. So bhakti is a cause of bhakti. It is not caused by performing pious activities or the causeless mercy of the Lord. Partiality is permitted for a madhyam bhakta who bestows his mercy upon innocent and avoids envious demons. Krishna is under control of his devotees. His mercy follows that of a devotee. Bhakti residing in the heart of a devotee causes him to feel compassionate and to bestow his mercy on others. This is the cause of bhakti appearing in them. That's why when we meet advanced devotees, we always say, oh, Prabhu, Kripa Karo, give me your ashirvad, and please give me your mercy, please bless me. So oftentimes we say, bhakti bhavatu, prema bhavatu. Maybe prema is a little bit, but bhavatu means let it be. Or may you have, may you receive, like we say, tatastu. Tatastu or bhavatu. Usually in Hindi they say bhavatu. Nayana, Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami bhavatu me, right? May I see the beautiful lotus eyes of Lord Jagannath. So in supporting his statements here, Krishna Chakravartipad is quoting from the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita, chapter 3, verse 46. And the wonderful teachings of Lord Krishna to Uddhava Mahashaya. So this is the verse 46. Vidoktam evaka kuravano nisangor pitam ishvare naishkamyam lavate siddhim rochan artha falashuti. By executing without attachment the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, offering results of such work to the Supreme Lord, one attains the perfection of freedom from the bondage of material work. The material fruit of results offered in the revealed scriptures are not the actual goal of Vedic knowledge, but are meant for stimulating the interest of the performer. The second chapter, verse 46. This was 3:46, is 2:46. Maharaj Mimi meets it, Navyogendras. Oh yeah, this is a very elaborate purport about the different types of devotees. Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvisat satsucha prema maitri kripa upeksha yakuroti samadhyama. This is explaining how the madhyam bhakta, the devotee functioning on the madhyama, or middle platform, he discriminates and sees four different people. The intermediate or madhyamadikari, he offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He makes friendship with all the devotees of the Lord. He shows mercy to the ignorant people who are innocent. And he disregards or avoids those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is his backing up, saying that the Madhyam Bhagavat, he is permitted to be partial. In other words, partiality means that he favors one and he ignores another. So the envious demons that are not interested, he ignores them. He doesn't give his mercy to them. But the innocent, who are inquisitive and innocent and pious, they're interested in God, then the Madhyam Adhikara, he bestows his mercy on them. He gives them bhakti. He initiates them. He shows his mercy. And that preacher is known as the Kripa Shakti Murti of the Lord. Krishna is Lila Purushottam. He's always absorbed in his own divine bliss, Rasika Shekhar or Rasaraj. Therefore, he does not feel pain. He does not feel the pain of the conditioned souls in the material world. So because Krishna is absorbed in Leela, it's impossible to get any mercy from him. Like if someone is always in vacation, he's a very rich man, and you go to him and say, "Oh, let me have some, I want some money." He says, I don't have any money with me. You have to go to my factory or to my bank in the main country. So Krishna says, if you approach him for mercy, you won't have any luck. Mercy only appears when one realizes the misery of other jivas. So when you realize how others are suffering, then there's a chance for mercy to manifest in the softened heart of a devotee. But Krishna has no awareness of the suffering of the jivas in the form of Krishna, Lila Purushottam. Shirdakshay Vishnu, Super Soul, is fully aware of everything, past, present, and future. But Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he is not aware. Krishna has bestowed his Kripa Shakti energy to his devotee. So that the bestowal of mercy to others by Krishna's devotee does not depend on any other cause. The devotee can independently bestow his mercy on others. Krishna, by his own independent will, has given superior position to his devotees. The bound conditioned souls can only attain liberation by the mercy of a sadhu, not directly from the Lord. And so one acharya said, surrender is the stage upon which the drama of bhakti is performed. Very nice phrase. Surrender is sharanagati, that we have to surrender to Krishna. Surrender the stage. Stage means a platform. When you see a drama or you see a play, they're performing on a stage. So we have mercy cases. So only by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, especially Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, can we attain any degree of Krishna consciousness. That's why we always have to take the name of Gauranga and Gurudev and pray for the mercy, cry for the mercy, beg for the mercy, steal the mercy, somehow get mercy. Kripa karo, kripa karo, kripa karo.